40. Justice Castle is recused in this matter. I am recused in this matter. Judge Arterburn will join the court, and Justice Miller Lerman will preside.
Mr. Domina, you may proceed to the dais. Before we commence oral argument, for the record purposes, the chief has indicated that the chief is recused, Justice Wright is not participating, and Judge Arterburn from the Court of Appeals is joining the court for purposes of this case. Here's my understanding, help me out, all counsel. We have 30 minutes in this case, and that Mr. Domina, on behalf of, forgive me for using first names, Marvel, will be speaking first. Is that right? 10
minutes, yes.
10 minutes, and now, and that will be your time now to reserve time if you wish to do so. Okay. And thereafter, Mr. Johnson will speak for 10 minutes, is that right, on behalf of Lyle? So far, so good?
I'm not sure there was a decision on which of us went first.
Okay, well, that's then the order in which we're going to proceed. Okay. And thereafter, Mr. Irvin would speak on behalf of Bessie. Okay. But in any event, it's 10 minutes apiece, and you've reserved time, Mr. Domina.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. Sorry to belabor it, but now we're underway. Good morning.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of Wayne Forgy's widow, Marvel, and his three adult children. When Glenn Forgy, the father of Lyle and Wayne and Bessie, died in 1993, he had a 10-year-old trust and a 4-year-old amendment. He had a cattle operation, lots of land, and stock in a bank. Those were all active assets. Lyle, his son, was the trustee named before his death. He left a pour-over will. That trust, which he created, continued to be functional and run cattle operation, operate the land, and vote the stock of the bank without any judicial proceedings of any kind except the determination of inheritance taxes in state court in both South Dakota and Nebraska. There was never a registration of the trust. More fundamentally, there was never a probate proceeding initiated. Since there was never a probate proceeding initiated, the pour-over trust was never admitted to probate. There were never assets poured from that will into the trust. The trustee operated the assets actively as a business. None of the money was ever distributed, with some modest exceptions for Bessie. Bessie did get some small amounts from time to time in hours of urgent need. He was otherwise generally either self-sufficient or cared for by my client's deceased husband and father. This is perhaps the largest state in the history of Cuyahoga County, and it went almost 20 years before there was any sort of a proceeding in court. That proceeding was initiated by my clients. Upon initiating it, they learned these things. They knew rumblings about them before, but they learned them after they started these proceedings. Number one, Lyle did not file the federal estate tax return on time. Number two, Lyle did not pay the federal estate tax on time. Number three, Lyle suffered, or the trust and estate suffered at Lyle's hand, penalties of $854,000 due to the IRS, and in addition to that, lost an election under Section 6166 of the Internal Revenue Code that would have allowed the trust and the estate to have an alternate valuation and about $55,000 less tax had they been able to keep it, but they lost it because of the late filing. And they could have paid the entire estate tax in installments, borrowing the money from the Internal Revenue Service at a 2%, subsequently changed by Congress to a 4% interest rate. They also learned that instead of getting the advantage of that tax benefit and the interest benefit, taxes and pay the penalties from his own bank. He was the sole shareholder of its holding company. He elected the board of directors. He charged the trust and estate nearly 10% interest, 9.995%. And the money, the difference in all of the difference between 2 and 4%, and that rate went to his bank and to him.
Counsel, you called experts in this case, correct?
Yes.
And Lyle called experts, correct?
Yes.
And at the end of the day, the judge made a credibility decision as to the experts, correct?
In part, yes.
And was that an issue of fact or an issue of law when the judge decided credibility of witnesses?
Your Honor, to the extent that the question about which expert's opinion to adopt turned on credibility, it was an issue of fact.
Okay, and what's the standard of review on that?
The standard of review on that is that this is a trial de novo, but you give deference to the fact that the trial court observed the witnesses.
Aren't factual issues standard clearly erroneous?
I don't think so. Where there are issues of equity involved, and I think this is a case that's dominated by issues of equity.
Well, the issues of equity would be decided de novo, but the issues of fact would be decided differently, wouldn't they?
I think, as I read the standard of review that you've posited in the past, Your Honor, in this kind of a case, that distinction is not observed. And the reason it's not is because equity is intertwined in facts. Equity follows law. But without facts and controversy about them, equity has no work.
Okay, well, let's say hypothetically the standard of review on issue of facts is clearly erroneous. Tell me what you believe the county court did that was erroneous in picking one expert over the other.
Well, you know, Your Honor, the most obvious place is to look at the interest calculation. Lyle's accountants say there should be no recovery of the interest that was required to be paid on the debt for the estate tax that was paid in installments. Lyle's accountants say that's true by positing a hypothetical set of facts that did not occur. In point of fact, the interest that we seek was paid. It was lost. No hypothetical can undo that. And that is an abuse of discretion.
Okay, was that calculated into Lyle's expert when he came up with the net number of $854,000? He calculated the excess interest, but he also took into account that Hocking had negotiated a settlement with the IRS and that interest became deductible?
Well, the deduction of the interest is a different issue. So, Your Honor, I think the trial court also abused its discretion because it didn't understand the difference between the two. The $959,000 in interest at issue here is not accounted for by taking a deduction on $308,000 disputed dollars and getting some tax reduction for that deduction. And by the way, a deduction never offsets tax dollar for dollar, which was another mistake the trial court made.
Didn't their experts say it was 55% would be treated because that was a marginal rate?
Yes, that's true.
So wasn't it considered by the trial court?
Was it considered? Perhaps. Exhibit 271, which was dealt with in some detail at trial, however, shows us exactly what was paid to the service. And the amount that was paid to the service precisely. We had a very difficult time piecing that together because of Lyle's administration, is a number that cannot be found in the expert witness reports that Lyle adduced and cannot be followed through those reports because they proceed from hypothetical facts different from those that actually occurred. So in this case, if it's true that an expert witness can hypothesize something that did not occur and you proceed from false factual premises, compared with someone who proceeds from the actual facts, if that creates the credibility issue, then you're right, there is no way for this court to change it. But if the trial court fails to discern that these facts are false, the premise cannot be established, and therefore the logic does not flow, then there's an abuse of discretion. And in this case, that's what happened. Mr. Lockwood used actual numbers. Every syllable of the work done by the people from Lutz proceeds from one of three hypothetical facts that did not occur. That's the biggest reason for a reversal. Here's the second. There was no rent paid by Lyle for a decade and a half on a 12,000-acre pasture. And during that time, Bessie got nothing. Now, Wayne used that pasture, too. There's a conflict in the evidence about whether Wayne paid rent. I concede there's a conflict about that. The trial court didn't find that Wayne didn't pay rent. Nobody's ever sued Wayne for rent till this moment. Lyle got away with using 12,000 acres free. So he got a great big bonus in interest. He got a free pasture, and he had those two incentives to keep this thing unadministered for two decades. And it's time to fix it. We request reversal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Michael Johnson and I represent Appellee Lyle Forgy. I'd like to discuss three cases in this court or the Court of Appeals decided since the filing of the briefs, all of which involve the standard of review. In In Re Robert L. McDowell Revocable Trust, 296 Nev 565, 894 Northwest 2nd, 810, May 5th, 2017, this court reviewed a case involving a distribution of a trust for errors appearing on the record. In the NRA Estate of Radford, 297 Nebraska 748, 901 Northwest 2nd, 261, September 15, 2017, this court held that even when review is de novo on the record, when evidence is in conflict, this court considers and gives weight to the fact that the trial judge heard and observed the witnesses and accepted one version of the facts rather than another. The last case is a decision by the Court of Appeals that is not designated for permanent publication, but is arguably related to the cause of action in the case before the court within the meaning of Court Rule 2102E. In In Re Henry Wilson Revocable Trust, 2017 Westlaw 5608085, November 21, 2017, the Court of Appeals reviewed a surcharge action against a trustee for breach of duty for error appearing on the record and concluded that there was competent evidence to support the county court's decision to assess or not assess the challenge amounts for surcharge. The Court of Appeals noted that the appellant's arguments challenged factual determinations made by the county court and stated that in the review of evidence that is in conflict on the material issue of fact, the appellate court considers and may give weight to the circumstances that the trial judge heard and observed the witnesses and accepted one version of the facts rather than another. The court also touched upon the fact that there are many variables a trial court may consider when determining an award of attorney fees, and even a significantly lower award than the attorney fees requested will not constitute an abuse of discretion. The Court of Appeals held that the county court was in the best position to determine what attorney fees were warranted. In Re Margaret Masney Revocable Trust, cited in the brief, this court has held that the standard of review in regard to trust is an issue-specific approach. In In Re Lois v. Steinhoffel Trust, cited in the brief, the Court of Appeals reviewed a case involving breach of fiduciary duty.
Counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I need to... The standard of review, we can certainly get back to, but in this case, you presented an expert who made a hypothetical division of Glenn's trust upon death and assigned assets based upon that hypothetical division, correct?
No, I don't believe it. It was hypothetical only to the extent that it was based upon a division that occurred at the time of death.
Well, counsel,
and assuming that the taxes were timely paid.
You don't agree that the three trusts were never created at date of death? You disagree?
They were not created at the date
of
death.
Well, then wouldn't your client be saying something hypothetical?
Well, let me go back to the issue of hypothetical.
Okay, well, we're getting off track. Let me get back to my question. Anyway, I apologize. Maybe it was a bad question. My point is that whatever you want to call it, your expert divided it into three trusts as of date of death. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct.
Okay. And he assigned assets to each of the three trusts, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, he then did an income and expense analysis of Lyle's trust and Wayne and Bessie's trust up to the time of trial,
yes.
Correct? Okay. My question is this, and I know it's a long way to get there, but the rents, the that Mr. Domina brought up, that your client did not pay rents on the land he used from date of death until the time of trial or time of distribution. If you're going to give him the bank dividend income because you're going to say that's his asset at date of death, why wouldn't you give Bessie, for example, rental income from date of death, because that land, in theory, was her property from date of death until the time of trial?
All right, because there was a joint venture at the time of death between the trust, Wayne, and Lyle. There was no agreement that rent would be paid. Rather, there was a sharing of the sales of cattle. The trust got 20%.
But if you're going to hypothetically divide it out, it's not the trust land at that point. In order to follow the hypothetical, the land had to be divided out. It became Wayne and Bessie's land.
But Bessie got a share of the overall operation, which would be the 20%. That share was in a joint venture, and the profits from the entire operation were divided out. And back to the standard of review, the standard of review on breach of fiduciary duty is for error appearing on the record. Okay. That would be the damages for the federal estate tax. That would be any damages for the ranch income. It would also be the damages for the other things that are complained about.
But back to my question, if it's Bessie's land, why isn't she entitled, even if it's only 20% of the rents, why isn't she entitled to that 20%?
She got it.
When did she get it?
She got 20% of the overall ranch income.
What about the other 80%?
Well, the expert said
that, did she?
No, but the expert said it was a joint venture.
But she wasn't part of the joint venture, was she?
Well, she was because that land was utilized in the joint venture.
20%.
But the expert said that there was actually needed to be 50% of the land used to handle the cattle that was that the trust share. That Lyle and Wayne were providing labor that was worth $550,000. They were also providing crop off some related land.
Which made them more productive. Didn't they get more money because they were providing this? Hired somebody else to do the labor,
The court relied upon the expert to determine whether or not there was a breach of trust by Lyle in connection with operating the ranch. And the court found that it did not, based upon all the variables, that this was a joint venture.
Let me get a little more basic, and maybe I'm not keeping up with you. The land became a trust asset.
Well, the land was operated in a joint venture.
Did the joint venture become a trust asset?
Well, the trust had a 20% interest in the joint venture, and Wayne had a 35% interest in it, and Lyle had a 45% interest.
But counsel, the joint venture didn't own the land. If we're going to follow your expert's hypothetical, Bessie and Wayne owned the land, not the joint venture.
Well, that's true.
And there's no leases in the record, is there, between the joint venture and the land?
But I think what the thing is
so
that this land
no
is throwing off income. This land is throwing off income in the form of profits through the sale of cattle.
Correct. Well, that may explain the productivity of this trust asset. Firstly, is or isn't a trust asset, and then it's going to perform in a certain fashion, and perhaps you want to get into the weeds according
right.
to the deal.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So,
a trust asset can either rent out the land, or the trust asset can engage in a ranching operation and devote the land and cattle to the ranching operation and receive profits from the ranching. The court looked at that ranching operation and found as a factual determination that it had sufficient ranch income based upon the actual operation and relied upon the expert who provided that testimony.
Who received the income off the ranch operation?
Well, it was allocated to Bessie and Wayne's share.
And the expert didn't testify that was in the best interest of Wayne and Bessie. He testified that it was not necessarily a mistake to continue the cattle operation. You couldn't anticipate the unexpected downturn in cattle prices.
All right.
That's all he testified to. He didn't testify with anything about that being in the best interest of Wayne or Bessie, did he?
What the court determined, though, is that there was a reasonable return of income on the 20% share of the trust for Bessie in the joint operation.
What is Bessie's share of the 20%?
Well, it would have been half because the trust had 20% of the overall operation, and all of the land was allocated equally to Wayne's share and Bessie's share. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is, if you are an owner of land, if you own land, there's one of two ways you can make income, maybe more. One is to rent it out. Another is to have cattle and feed cattle on that land. In this case, that's what happened. There was a ranching operation. So Bessie got her income from the cattle operation. The land was used in a cattle operation.
But it wasn't used in her best interest if you're going to hypothetically say it's her land. That's my point. You're saying the dividends can all go to Lyle because the bank stock is his. But then you're not saying the incomes should go to Bessie because the land's hers. It seems like that's an inconsistent point.
But it does go. It was allocated by the expert to the shares of Wayne and Bessie. What the point is the court was making a determination that the ranch income that was actually earned during this time period was reasonable, and there was no breach of fiduciary duty on Lyle's part in regard to the income that was received. Okay. It was a ranching operation, not a rest.
Judges, do you have more questions? No. Thank you, sir.
May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Kyle Irvin, and I am counsel for Bessie McCoy, daughter of Glenn Forgey, the decedent in this matter, and also counsel for Terry Worth and Rodney Worth, grandsons of the decedent, and also sons of Bessie McCoy. If I could, I just want to pick up and hopefully clarify this issue of rent that the court was just following up on. The joint venture, as Mr. Johnson termed it, was essentially 80% Lyle and Wayne, so 80% of the cattle owned by Lyle and Wayne, 20% was owned by the trust. So that's the cattle operation. If the operation is actually going to use land, then an operation should be paying land rent to the actual owner of the land. Well, who is the owner of the land? Well, if you take, as the justice was following up, if you take Lyle's experts, hypothetical owner of that land as of the date of death should have been Bessie McCoy. Or half of that, including Wayne Forgey. So there should have been rent paid for on the 80% use of that cattle operation on the trust land. So that rent should have been coming in to the share that should ultimately go to Bessie McCoy. Now, we feel, though, that the trial, in this case, the county court, erred in sort of going back and retroactively assuming that all this had taken place on the date of death for Glenn Forgey in 1993. In fact, it did not take place. The trust was not separated. Expenses weren't paid as of the date of death. What in fact happened was there was a period of administration, of active administration for more than 20 years, and expenses were paid, taxes were paid. You look at Article 4A of the trust, that step has to happen first before you get to Article 4B of the trust when the actual residuary is created. So the idea that you can collapse the two hypothetically and retroactively to the date of death, in my opinion, creates a troubling precedent. Because if you can sort of avoid the terms of the trust and not follow the testator's intent, which is to be the pole star when we look at these things, then essentially every trust and estate case that comes by will try to go back and prorate expenses and taxes as of the date of death for a decedent. And so in this case, if you look at the actual structure of the trust, you have to follow Article 4A. Once those taxes and expenses are paid, then you know what the residuary is. We had not created a residuary by the time of trial in this case.
Counsel, if you assign values using 2013 values in the expert's reports to the judge's order, and you only take the bank stock at $7 million versus $9 million, then the outcome of the final outcome of the court's orders within a couple hundred thousand dollars of what you and Mr. Domino want, isn't it? As far as the distribution of assets to the trust. Now, the offsets are drastically different. But as far as the actual valuation in the end, isn't it very close?
It is close, Your Honor, but I think part of it comes into how the bank dividend income is assigned. So Lyle Forgy argued that as of the date of death, his share should have been given the bank dividend income.
Other than the bank dividends and the difference in the stock, that's the only differences in the valuations, right?
Correct.
Okay, otherwise, in the end, you got what you wanted. You just didn't get the valuation you wanted, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and certainly when we look at the trust itself, in terms of rents actually paid to Betsy McGuire, not paid, we feel like that was something that clearly the county court erred in not assigning to Betsy McCoy's share.
Now the bank stock, with the difference in two experts testifying and the court choosing to find one expert more credible than another, what's our standard of review on that?
Well, in Your Honor, we feel like in that situation, given the abuse of discretion that Mr. Domina indicated in between the two experts, the big difference between those two experts was the discount applied.
Okay, but what's the standard? You think the standard review is abuse of discretion?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, what do you have any legal authority for that? Because I don't remember you're citing any abuse of discretion standard of review in your brief.
Well, we focused more on sort of the structure of the trust as opposed to the expert differences, but...
Because applying equity principles, that would be a de novo review, the equity principles, but wouldn't factual issues be, even if I agreed with Mr. Dama that it's not clearly erroneous, we would still defer to the trier of fact on those type of issues, don't we, on credibility of witnesses?
Well, in Your Honor, it's the question that we wanted to pose is more, how did they determine that? And if you look at, it's sort of the application of law of whether a marketability discount should have been applied here or not.
Doesn't that come down to credibility?
I don't think so, because in this court has found that when you take and look at whether that discount is applicable, the equities of being the separation of the bank stock, basically when you have a residuary that's creating one-third, and part of that one-third is based on the equality of the valuation of the bank stock. When we look at the valuation of the bank stock, that's got to come into that. So while I would still say that that's mixed with sort of the equitable principles, as Mr. Domina indicated, that when an expert's looking at valuing the bank stock and we're trying to get to an equal valuation, the overall separation of the trust is still under equitable principles.
But even if we went with that standard, we still defer to the trier of fact on credibility of witnesses, correct?
Credibility, but the question being methodology, I think, in this case, and solely on the marketability discount, because when you look at the two valuations, that is the key difference between the two. And the question of a marketability discount, as we pointed out in our brief, there shouldn't be a marketability discount in this case, because Lyle Forgy has admitted he's ready and willing to buy the shares of the bank stock. And so there isn't any challenge or problem with marketing this stock. I mean, there has to be some basis and some basis in the marketability discount, because it's a challenge to market it. If there is no challenge because Lyle Forgy has stated on the record he's ready and willing to sort of be able to purchase the bank stock, there shouldn't be any marketability discount.
Well, isn't the bottom line is you think the county court should have accepted your expert over their expert?
Correct.
Okay.
And you're focusing on methodology.
Yes, Your Honor. Mainly the marketability discount.
Okay.
In addition, we've also indicated, in regarding attorney's fees, Justice Snickley here, Betsy McCoy had to go to court and as we talked about, try for the first time to find out that her brothers, neither one of her brothers, paid ranch rent for over 10 years. There were never any accountings provided during this time period. Even the county court found that. Hence, once Betsy McCoy found out, wait a minute, that income wasn't available, and she was told by Lyle Forgy, the trustee, well, no income's available to you because it's all got to go to federal estate taxes. What Lyle failed to mention is, oh, by the way, we could have also had more income in the trust if both I, Lyle Forgy, and Wayne Forgy had been paying ranch rent to run our personal cattle operation. So once Betsy McCoy discovered all this and had to hold Lyle accountable for his breaches of trust and also assert her rights in the trust matter, justice and equity should require that her attorney's fees be assessed to Lyle Forgy under the statute.
Counsel, do you believe your fees should be the same as Marvel's fees?
Your Honor, our fees are stated in the record.
Well, you're asking for $99,000, whereas they're asking for they did it on contingency, I believe, 10% of damages. Is that a fair statement?
That's
okay,
what.
Okay, so 10% of the damages the court found would be $85,000, right?
Correct.
So, but Marvel's the one that called the experts. I don't think. Did you even call an expert?
We identified an expert in some of our pleadings.
Right, but you never called an expert, and you didn't initiate the action. So in fairness, should yours be more than what Marvel gets?
In our opinion, Your Honor, ours should be justice and equity required what our fees were in the action.
Okay.
In addition, when we look at what the county court cited as the Warman case, basically assuming what should have been done was actually done, and going back to, again, the date of death, we again feel like that was an erroneous citation to a proposition, because when you look at the full quote of Warman related to that statement in the third restatement of trust, what that quote actually says is, we only treat equity only treats as being done what should have been done, if the trust was a passive trust. There is no one that thinks that this Glen Forgy Trust was a passive trust. In fact, there was active management still going on. Lyle Forgy has tried to cite that active management. There were still rents being collected. There were still duties of the trustee being done. And so Warman is vastly different than the Glen Forgy Trust. That restatement third quote, again, only applies to a passive trust. The restatement third defines a difference between an active trust and a passive trust. A passive trust is basically a trust where the whole duties of the trustee are not to interfere with the rights of the beneficiaries. Here, this was clearly an active trust because rents continued to be paid. There were still duties of the trustee. The trust hadn't actually been separated and still has not been separated into its residue as of this point. So we feel that that clearly was an erroneous citation to the wrong standard. There's not any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you. How much time does Mr. Donovan have, please? Thank you.
May it please the court, I don't think you ever defer to the trial court on issues of fact. You give deference to the fact that the trial court observed the witnesses. There's a difference. Deferring means don't look. Giving deference means if I evaluate what is in the record, and I get there all the way down to this question, is it this witness or this witness? That's giving deference. Then the trial court's judgment is decisional. But it's not a don't look issue.
Counsel, was this handled under the county court's authority to conduct probate matters?
Well, the proceeding, there were two suits filed. One was a probate proceeding. Separately, there was a trust proceeding. They're docketed under 13-1.
But they'd still fall under the probate authority of the court. But.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Well, or the trust statute, yes. Same thing. I agree.
And we've held that to be one and the same, haven't we?
I think the standard review is the same. I thought you were asking something else. I misunderstood. So I'm finished with that distinction. I want to say one more thing about these experts. One more thing. That is, they left out the hay, $850,000.
Thank you.
That concludes oral argument for this morning. We're adjourned. You are excused.